I'm Dr. Rod Berger. Sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and explore some of today's most pressing educational issues through the experienced eyes of leading education personalities. Welcome to Coffeed. All right, John, well, it's nice to catch back up with you. I know that last time that we were sitting down and talking, there was a story that came out that we were referencing that I know we wanted to spend a little more time on, and that was, you know, this call from different organizations for teachers to have mandatory training on autism. And when they say teachers, it's all educators. And I'm just curious as to, I'll give you my first blush. At first blush, I say, that's a fantastic idea. Then sort of the cynic in me, or that little, you know, that gnome on my shoulder kind of, you know, taps me on the shoulder and says, is it a slippery slope? So tell me, should I listen to the gnome or should I listen to you?
Well, I don't think it's a slippery slope. I don't think it is. Okay. I think that there are a handful of things that if we would just devote more pre-service time to all teachers, physical ed teachers, history teachers, elementary chemistry teachers, that would have a knowledge about exceptionalities, then our ability to keep those kids in the mainstream is enhanced, and yet identify them for special services and is enhanced at the same time. And these are things that just a general social studies teacher never gets exposed to in today's current teacher training program. That just would be, that the payoff on this would be gigantic, both in terms of dollars and in terms of benefits to child. I know everybody, I think about this, and anybody who has a bone to chew, or I think about clubs. I remember the Exchange Club wanted to make sure that in the curriculum in Tennessee that every child be taught how to balance a checkbook. Well, that's a good function. That's a kind of practical function for living in today's world. And then other groups wanted to make sure every child gets citizenship education, and every child gets something that their industry wants to promote as a value in America or a skill in America. And so when you hear people say, we want every teacher in pre-service, I know what you mean about the slippery slope. I know there's just so much time in pre-service training for kids and becoming college students.
John, I guess what I mean by slippery slope, or the question that I have, is that, you know, people, whether they are teachers, they are parents, or they're part of an IEP team, it always feels like, you know, the challenge is, well, it's shifting responsibility, right? So what happens in a world where all teachers have some level of mandatory training, and we haven't even talked about, you know, what is that training look like, and how much would benefit them, and how much would then basically tee it up for others to say, okay, well, we are providing these services, and that means we don't need to provide other very valuable services. So I guess that's part of the question that I have, is the construct so that it doesn't dilute the services that are being provided and or put too much pressure on educators in the classroom with students.
Well, when you say, yes, we have trained everybody so the services are being provided, and that is a slippery slope. I agree with you when you put it in that context. I had an interview recently with a number of people, several interviews and some of the research that I'm always doing, particularly the heads of the Dyslexia Association, kind of relating how autism and dyslexia as handicapping conditions are kind of taking, dyslexia is taking a page out of the autism playbook, if you will. And let me run with this for a second and see if it, hope it makes sense to the listeners and resonates for the question about should all teachers have pre-service training on autism. The Dyslexia Foundation, particularly through a grassroots group called Decoding Dyslexia, is very aggressive in passing legislation that says that children who have dyslexia should qualify for special education services. Now, I think, wait a minute, don't we already have IDEA? Why are they why are they doing this? And Decoding Dyslexia is grassroots. There's no national organization. There's not a president to speak with. There's not a spokesperson for the group. There's not a public relations group organization or a person for the group. So you read about them, and you may talk to a member or two who can just talk as an individual, not for the group. But they're saying that, no, special ed is not allowing kids with dyslexia who may have dyslexia, but who may be not two standard deviations below on reading or not falling behind significantly in their academics, but dyslexia is holding that child back from really being the student or the learner or the person that they could be. And because the rules are written that says that you're not far enough behind, it's like, we're not going to help you until you're in trouble. We're not going to teach you to swim. We're just going to throw you in the river, and then we're going to try to pull out those kids who can't swim and put them in special education. And those kids who can't swim just swim on through school. It's this, you got to fail first situation that our special education group came to, that special education philosophy in America. It's treatment for failure. It's, we'd like to identify everybody early and know what they need as soon as they need it. But our situation is they failed, and they're getting farther and farther behind, and the wheels of the machine of special education turn slowly before we can get them identified, get them screened, get them tested, get them IEP'd, get them placed. Oh, months go by. Months in a two or second grader or a third or three-year-old's lives, they develop. That hurts so much that time. So the Decoding Dyslexia is taken as legislation passed in over 28 states to say teachers need to be able to identify kids with dyslexia. They need to get them services. And one of the things is that this group is saying that basic phonetic spelling, particularly through Orton-Gillingham, particularly opposed to whole language, benefits kids with dyslexia. And that it needs to be put into the curriculum so that all teachers understand phonics, understand the OG methods of teaching language. It's when it is applied, it has an incredibly high rate of success for teaching not only kids with dyslexia, but all children to read better. They have taken their frustration right to the legislations to say, hey, fix this problem for us because public ed won't. Take that to autism. Autism is a problem similarly in that it's you want to diagnose it as early as possible, and you want people to know how to treat it in the schools where the kids are spending their time. And if we do teach those skills about, and again, the autism families have legislation in 43 states. It's not telling public schools what to do. That's the legislation that's guaranteeing insurance coverage for applied behavioral analysis, basically, for those lucky people who have just the right type of health insurance that give them access to that, to the paying for applied behavioral analysis.
I love that parallel because it does look at the different situations and it asks some broader questions about, you know, who's being covered by what. What are the organizations and communities to help support that? And then how does that then impact the classroom? Let me close with this, John. If you were a teacher, what would be the three questions you would ask in a world where training for autism at the educator level would become a reality? What would maybe three questions be that a teacher would or should ask about that and their role?
I think a teacher, this is a general kind of elementary teacher, I would say, I would ask if I was a teacher, tell me about applied behavioral analysis. What is applied behavioral analysis? This is one stem right now. Applied behavioral analysis is dramatically in the news, is dramatically in the special education news as the it's a buzzword almost. It's not a panacea by any means. It's not going to cure everything, but it is a science that does change behavior. It's mostly associated with children with autism, but applied behavioral analysis is also applicable in dog training. It's applicable for senior citizens. It's applicable for human resources units and corporations to see the world through an applied behavioral analysis lens. So as a teacher, I would want to know about applied behavioral analysis. I'd want to have it in servicing. I'd like to have pre-service. I'd like to take a course in it if I'm an undergraduate teaching major, if I could. Or if I'm a teacher, I'd like to have some serious training or at least exposure to it so that I would understand it. So that would be a first question on autism. Second question on autism I would ask is, what are all the resources that are directed toward making that child's life better that has autism? Because autism is a handicapping condition that comes with an insurance policy for lots of children now. Not all children. Again, we said it's 43 states have it, and then within those 43 states, only certain types, group life insurance programs have it, not self-insured programs have this, unless the company has elected to cover autism and autism treatments. So lots of people still don't have coverage for this, but as an educator, I want to know all the resources pointed toward a child, whether the child's in special education or mainstreamed into my third grade classroom, what all goes on to serve that child. The third question I'd want to know is from everything that I read, family life for children on the severe end of the autism scale is very difficult. Divorce rates are high. What do we do what are we doing as a school? What can I do as a teacher to help that family with that child, make that child's life better and that family's life better? If I'm going to have a child with autism in my classroom for 6 hours a day or 3 hours a day, what can I do to improve that child's life? What's the dynamic and what can my role be to make the trajectory of that child's life better and make that child's family life and his parents happier, more whole, more satisfied?
You know what
those
I love
are the three questions I would ask.
Yeah, what I love about that last question, John, is that it speaks to the community impact that includes the school, that includes the family, in that you may be able to work with a child because you've gathered information and skill through training to work with children on the autism spectrum, but it's also about what happens before and after school and on the weekend and the supportive community that you can put out there for families, and that teachers can play a role in that, because we know that they care, they want to be a part of it, and if we can give them the knowledge and the skills to do so and the resources, to your point about those targeted to help autistic children, then everybody's all the better. Well, John, this was fun. I appreciate it. I know it was we covered some really deep topics here in a brief amount of time, but it's time for me to get some more coffee, and I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rod. Always a pleasure. We'll have coffee soon.
Thanks, John. Join us for our next cup of coffee as we continue to have conversations in education that matter to you. I'm Dr. Rod Berger, and this is Coffee.